The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia Elcoury.
And I'm Jen Coburn.
Lovely to have you join us this evening on Mix 92.6. We've got a regular back in the studio with us. Good old Trevor Meriden is joining us again this evening, and he's brought along some of his great colleagues and friends who are going to talk to us this evening about the Men of Fields and a big walk they're doing very soon. Trevor, thank you so much for joining us on The Parent Show. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be back. Thank you, Lydia, and thank you, Jen.
Hello. Nice to meet you. We haven't met before, so I'm looking forward to this, Trevor, learning all about what you guys are doing.
Okay, looking forward to tell you about it. So what do you want to know first, Lydia?
So, how have you been doing? How are you, Trevor?
I'm very well, getting by. We're very busy with Garden Fields Cricket Club business at the moment. As you know, but maybe the listeners might need reminding that we're a sort of collection of St Albans dads, and we're quite obsessed with charity fundraising. I mean, we run lots of events. The biggest of which is the thing that I'm hoping we'll be talking about today, which is our biannual charity walk. And we've been doing this for a while now, and very fortunate to have recently won an award for community impact from the St Albans District Chamber of Commerce for what we've done over the years. And if I can tell you about the next walk, you know, which is coming up very soon, less than a month, early July, we're going to be supporting an absolutely amazing local charity called Youth Talk. And over 20 of us will be undertaking a rigorous, another 100 kilometre plus walk, as we've sort of talked to you about before. This time it's around the Norfolk Fens and coastline to support the wonderful Youth Talk cause. I'll let Jim in a minute sort of talk a bit more about what Youth Talk does. But from sort of our point of view, we were very aware of the fact when we met Youth Talk that it was so important for there to be a sort of trustworthy, calm, professional environment for young people to feel comfortable in their talks about sort of mental health and the support that they need. And this comes at a time when there's a really critically short supply of great counselling. So what we're trying to do with this latest walk is coming up very, very soon. We're doing our training. Really on this route, we're just looking to raise sort of £20,000 for Youth Talk. And that, I understand, and Jim will correct me if it's wrong, is the equivalent of about 400 sort of counselling sessions. And absolutely passionate about doing this. We're always trying to support charities that, you know, are relevant to our own experiences. And in the past, you'll know that we've sort of raised money for local sort of hospices and in cause of things, that unfortunate things that have happened around sort of Garden Field School, which the unfortunate demise of a couple of pupils, which caused us to raise money for Great Ormond Street as well in the past. And this is the latest one to really get us, if you like, sort of emotionally. And we just thought we had to do something to help Youth Talk.
Brilliant.
Trevor, you say you're obsessed with this charity fundraising. It sounds amazing. How many of these have you done then for someone who hasn't met you before?
We've done four before, so this is number five, and I'll probably get this bit wrong, but I think the first one was around the Isle of Wight, which was absolutely massive. It's a long way around the Isle of Wight. The second one was along this sort of called the Jurassic Walk, which was very, very up and down. So you could sort of walk for about sort of 10 hours and only sort of actually travelled about 2 miles. But in the end, we did over 100 kilometres on that one. We then went on the Ridgeway, the famous Ridgeway that ends up at Ivinghoe Beacon. And then a couple of years ago, we went to Northern Ireland and we did that for a combination of a local hospice there and also the Ukraine Red Cross appeal there. So this is number five.
Wow.
And yeah, so we've got a lot of experience of sort of blisters and sore feet, and we need a year in between to recover.
Yeah.
And then we're fine after that. Yeah.
The memory of the pain has dissipated by the time you're ready to do it again.
Yeah.
But hang on a second, Trevor. You slipped that in very, very quietly. Award. Well done. Congratulations on winning the award. That's absolutely brilliant.
Well, we were really, really gobsmacked to sort of get the award. It was named after Michael Weaver, who many people will know as late and great sort of patron of the local sort of community, the local sort of chamber of commerce, who I met once or twice. Absolutely inspirational guy, and his big thing was all about kind of community impact. And we were very honoured to receive that award sort of a couple of years ago for the various walks that we'd done. And we had a wonderful evening as well, you know, down at Sotwell House. And I think that's probably around about the time that the conversation started with you, Talk, I think. So, I mean, Jim can sort of confirm that. And that was a sort of magical evening. And it was great to be recognised for that. But it also, the more important thing is that it's just kind of made us realise that we were doing something right, and now's the time to do something else.
So you've been winning awards. The ice packs have done their job. Blisters have healed. Can you tell us any more details about this walk in particular, Trevor?
Well, I do some of the talk sometimes, as Lydia will know, but I'm not great on details. So I'm going to hand you over to Nick, who is on the walk with us, and he, along with a couple of the other of the MOFs, MOF stands for Men Afield, so I'm not sure I explained that or not, who's basically been the expert in navigating the route. And I know I'm building you up a bit here, Nick, but I think it's well deserved.
But you know, this is a perfect opportunity to talk to Jim Lewis from Youth Talk. We know and love the work you do on the Parents Show, and thank you so much for what you do for our community. We get the, you know, the pleasure of talking to people who've been recipients of conversations with Youth Talk, and you guys, I mean, you do a brilliant job, and I'm so thrilled that the Men of Fields are going to raise 20,000, hopefully more, for Youth Talk. Welcome, Jim. Welcome.
No, thank you so much, Lydia and Jen. It's brilliant to be on the show. Wonderful. And just reiterate, we are over the moon being chosen by Men of Fields as their charity for this year's walk. And Trevor's absolutely right. I was at that award ceremony in Sotwell House, where I think they first met Rachel Skimpkin, who's our fundraising manager, and the conversation begun. So I was lucky enough to meet some of the team a couple of times, actually, since January when I joined Youth Talk. And they're such a great bunch of guys doing some amazing work. So I'm hoping to join them for a day, maybe two, and join in the fun. Certainly be walking Friday with them, which would be great, because the interactions I've had with them so far have been very, very, very fun. So
sounds like a killer combination, doesn't it? Lots of fun, but raising lots of money for a great cause. And Youth Talk, I'd love to know a bit more about it. Can you explain what you do?
Yeah, so it's a 27-year-old charity, which is hard to believe because many people won't know about that. I first came across it. I was in education for 30 years in a local school. I was a deputy head. I was a designated safeguarding lead. So I dealt with social services, et cetera, et cetera. I've been at the sharp end when things have been really, really tough, and have experienced the ultimate heartbreak when things don't go well with young people. Our counsellor at the time pointed Youth Talk out to me. And since then, I've been doing bits and pieces. I'm a bit of an auctioneer on the side, et cetera, et cetera. And then late last year, this opportunity came up when they were visiting the business that I was working in. And this position at the charity came up. And within about 5 seconds, I'd applied for it. So, I mean, I'm absolutely delighted to be there. But effectively, it's a crucial service offering unbelievable support to young people who are struggling. Somebody pointed out to me the other day, and I've sort of changed my messaging just over the last couple of weeks, that because it's a self-referral service, so it's 13 to 25-year-olds, they have to contact us. It can't be a GP, a parent, somebody from a school. They have to take that first step themselves. The fact that they do that, they've already made that huge, courageous, brave first step. These are people who are already on the road to hopefully dealing with the issues that they're having to manage on a day-to-day basis. So it's very much about empowering the next generation to sort of deliver on a sort of the potential they have and have a fulfilling life going forward, and a happy one, and one full of hope. So it's really, really powerful. And I've met quite a few of the young people that have been through Youth Talk who are now members of our youth panel. So they sort of have a responsibility for educating us on the right messaging for young people, They created our latest logo and strap lines, et cetera, et cetera. So they're a very, very important part of the charity. And it's just phenomenal what they do. We have 15 highly qualified psychodynamic counsellors. We're very choosy about who counsels at Youth Talk because we want our young people to have the best. Yeah, it's not difficult to get passionate about it. I can tell you.
You can tell you are so passionate about it, Jim. And it's no surprise. Yeah. It sounds incredible. And this walk, Trevor, I think you said you're trying to raise over £20,000. What would that mean to Youth Talk? What would that actually mean?
Yeah, so, I mean, Trevor was absolutely right. So that's going to deliver 400 counselling sessions. So currently we have just over 100 young people coming through our doors every week for face-to-face counselling.
Wow.
So the rough cost of a counselling session, excluding the running costs of the charity, is about £50. So a week's counselling at the moment is costing us £5,000 just to cover the fees of our counsellors. So, you know, 400 sessions, that's a month of counselling that this will deliver from this one walk. It is extraordinary. It's huge. For us, it's huge. Our biggest challenge is that going forward, we need to double the service. You know, we have a waiting list of about 5 months. And as you might imagine, young people waiting 5 months aren't getting any better. They're only getting less well. And it's if we can get them through the doors sooner, then they need to spend less time with us, hopefully, because we're catching it earlier. So the knock-on effect of a long waiting list is that they need more time with us, which means we see less people. So, you know, what Men of Fields is doing is absolutely extraordinary. It's huge for us. We're quite a small charity. We need to be much bigger, to put it
yeah,
fair.
Yeah. And obviously, like, hopefully you might even get more than 20,000, knowing the generous community in St. Albans. I hope you really reach the stars. But we've got Nick. Sorry, Trevor. Over to you.
No, I was just going to say it's very important to say at the moment. If you heard a few pings in the background there, it's because I've just been looking at the Just Giving site, which obviously I'll tell you about in a minute. And we're just shy of 25% of the way to the target at the moment. So there is a lot of work still to do, and that's why we're very, very reliant on the goodwill of all those people out there in the community and beyond, because I know a lot of people beyond listen to this show on the subject of parenting as well. So we still have a long way to go in this. So we're actually determined to get there. But just to say that this is not a done deal. We have to still raise the rest of the money. So we have to sort of go out there and grab it in this last sort of in this month. So we encourage everybody to really think about this as we approach the walk during and beyond, of course, the walk as well.
So we want people to get involved and we want people to donate, but we need to know a bit more about what you're doing before we put some money down, guys. So Nick, Trevor said you're the guy that has worked on this route and is the mastermind. He used the word mastermind. Can you tell us exactly what you're going to put yourselves through to raise this money so that we can all hopefully jump on that Just Giving page?
Sure. And thank you. And Trevor has been far too kind. This is absolutely a team effort. I had a very small part to play in the organization of the route and more than happy to give you a bit of an overview. So yes, we are walking over 100K over just over 3 days. So it's a bit of a circular route. We start and finish in Great Yarmouth. Day one sees us navigating the Weaver's Way. So we'll be going through the Norfolk Broads, finishing in Stalham. So that's actually our longest day. It's about 25 miles start to finish for day one. And then day two sees us continuing on that same route up to North Walsham. And then we pick up the original Paston Way and then out towards the coast. And we stop in Bacton. And that's about 16 or 17 miles in day two. And then day three, we're actually walking down the Norfolk Coast Path. So taking in Sea Pauling and Winterton-on-Sea, overnighting in Caister-on-Sea, which is about a little over 20 miles. And then we'll have a nice relaxing last few miles back to Great Yarmouth in the morning of day four.
And what does a day look like for you guys on these walks? When are you starting and how many hours will you be walking a day?
Well, I think the benefit of having so many people is I think we naturally go on to often our little group. So it will take some longer than others, depending on their navigation and how much talking and all sorts. So 20 miles on average a day, we're looking at around 8-9 hours of walking with a stop or so. So I think there's an added incentive for everyone this year because it's at the same time as Euro 2024 started. And I think there is a 5 o'clock kickoff in most of the days that we're walking. So
yeah,
that will give us all incentive to start and finish at a good time.
Oh, I've got a great mental picture now of Trevor legging it at the last kilometre to get to the pub on time to watch the match.
You've never seen 24 men move faster than when kickoff's about to happen. Oh, brilliant.
Absolutely.
And yes. A cold pint, maybe. And it just sounds like a lot of fun, but also a lot of hard work. So you are really putting yourselves through it to raise this money. So I think this sounds like something worth donating to, for sure. What are you most looking forward to about the walk? Open to all, this one, all three of you.
Well, Jim's joining us on day two, so let's ask Jim first. What are you looking forward to, Jim?
Well, do you know what? I've got two young people in work experience Monday to Thursday, so literally as soon as I finish with them, I'm dashing up to Norfolk on the Thursday night because I don't want to miss out on maybe the refreshments. On Thursday evening.
They love a glass of sparkling water, those lads.
Do you know what? Exactly. I know. I realise that. But no, do you know what? It's just going to be... I mean, I love walking. I do quite a lot of cycling challenges as well for charity. But I love walking. So just to get out with all the gents on the Friday and having those conversations is really, really special. So if the weather's good, give me a bit of sunshine. I just can't think of anything better, right? Yeah. Walking through the countryside.
I'm hearing
tanning and talking, and knowing we're doing something quite special.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Jim will be walking much faster than us on day two because we'll be a lot of pain from day one, which is an exceptionally long day. Sorry, Nick, I interrupted you.
I was going to say after today's interview, meeting Jim in person will be a highlight for me and having him walk with us for a day. I think for me, aside from the obvious, which is the pride and achievement of raising so much money for a great cause and a fantastic charity, I think I've been on one walk, one of the previous walks. This one is slightly longer. But if the last one is anything to go by, for me, it's all about the stories and the silliness and the pranks that keep a group of 24 guys entertained for 8 or 9 hours of walking. And they tend to get revealed at the end of the day. We'll have a dinner and generally a quiz, which reveals some of the stories that may have happened over the course of the day that we may not all have personally witnessed. So that tends to keep our spirits high and I guess those stories enduring. So that is a definite highlight for me.
You can't underemphasize the fun in fundraising.
Nice.
Seriously, that's why we do it, because it's a great cause, but also you should have fun doing it.
That's brilliant. Sounds absolutely brilliant. And how then would somebody donate to this cause?
Okay, well, the easiest way to tell you is if you go direct, you take the direct route and just go to justgiving.com and then type into the search engine. I just experimented with this. If you type in youth talk and MOF, that's MOF for Men of Fields, Youth Talk and MOF, or MOF and Youth Talk, or some sort of combination, you will find us and you'll know it's us, because there is a sort of combo flag of Gardenfields Cricket Club and Youth Talk there, and then you'll know you're in the right place. And we're just encouraging, no matter how large or small your donations to make, whether you're motivated by the joy that it will bring or you're motivated by the pain that the walk will cause us. You know, I don't care really, as long as you contribute, that's fine by us. If you want to follow us, I gather we might have a little slot on your show at some point during the walk, but also you can follow us, our progress on Facebook. So you just Gardenfields Cricket Club, just type that in, or on Instagram if you're that way inclined, which is GF Cricket Club, or on I can't call it X, let's call it Twitter, Gardenfield CC on Twitter. So any of those is fine. Facebook's probably the most popular channel still on that, just for sort of ease of convenience in terms of also being able to put the links in and so on. So we'd encourage you to go to any of those kind of good social media organs, and that will also, of course, route you back to the fundraising page.
Brilliant.
As well.
Perfect. And of course, like, the great thing, we absolutely would love to talk to you while you're out and about. And I think what the social media will, it'll capture an element of it, but I think a good chat with you guys in the pub, 8 o'clock on either on the Sunday evening or 7 o'clock on the Thursday evening, mid Euros, I think I'll be a lot better value for money than your your lovely little Instagram pics or Twitter pics of you guys looking healthy walking along the Norfolk Broads.
Yeah. Well, you might need to bring your sort of your radio show editing equipment, I think, on that one. We might need to cut various bits out, but we're looking forward to it. So
once you don't swear, we'll be okay. We'll be grand.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'd love to join you, and it's great that you've said the socials and the Just Giving page. So MOF, Men of Fields, Youth Talk, put it into the search and you should get to it. Please, everybody, give generously. It's such a great cause, and it's such a really lovely thing that you're doing for our community. You know, it's great. We really appreciate it.
A month of counselling, you said, didn't you, Jim, for youth?
Yeah,
I mean, that is a lot that we could really all help with.
Massively. Yeah, it's very challenging times for young people out there for all sorts of reasons.
Well, guys, good luck. Get those blister packs out, knee supports, whatever it takes. You can do this. We are behind you and we can't wait to chat to you halfway through. And we'll be cheering you on from our very comfy sofas. I don't want to rub it in. But
That's what I was thinking, Jen. Maybe we should get on the same sofa, have a glass of Prosecco while we're interviewing
anything
them.
Anything that would support the men. Yeah. Anything for the, you know.
Yeah, we'll do our bit.
That's
too,
it.
Right?
We are team players. We are team players at the parent
show. It's all about making sacrifices. Exactly.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Listen, all the best, guys. Talk to you talk to you very soon from live from the Norfolk Broads.
Lovely to meet you all. Go for it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Take care. Bye.
Okay, thank you for having us. Take care.
We'll take a quick break now on The Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So welcome back to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. It's great to have you with us again. I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and I'm delighted to be joined by Lena Gardner, who is a legal director at Raiden Solicitors here in St Albans. And today we're touching on a really important topic, which is the impact of conflict and divorce on children. I think it's something we're all interested in, certainly on The Parent Show, and I'm sure you, our listeners, are too. Lena, thanks a million for joining us on The Parent Show.
Thanks, Lydia. Really good to be here.
And thanks for coming back to talk to us about divorce. We spoke to you recently about high conflict divorce, and this is really interesting to talk about the impact of conflict and divorce on children. So tell us, what are the main thoughts and feelings going on for children in divorce?
So there's quite a lot of research in this area, because as you say, it is such an important issue and a really important topic. And the main themes that come out of that are, first and foremost, children are likely to have an overwhelming feeling of grief and sadness when their parents are separating or going through a divorce. It's such a big change to the world that they have known their whole life. And with that feeling of change comes a real sense of loss. So that's the first important point to make. That can manifest in different ways, and we can talk about that as we go on. But often that can look like a lot of anger in children because they're going through that grieving process. Another thing it's likely that children are going to be feeling in this situation is fear and anxiety. A lot of uncertainty comes with parental separation and divorce, and they're going to try and fill in all the gaps in their mind, and that's going to often make children feel really worried and anxious about the situation. Some children may feel guilt. There may be a feeling that they're in some way to blame for the fact that their parents are separating. And that's something that we often can see. Powerlessness is another one, because children can often feel like they've got very little control over the situation and that they don't have much of a say in what's going to happen. Children can feel divided loyalties when their parents are separating, and we can talk about that in more detail because that's a really important one as well. And then finally, feelings of rejection and isolation are often quite common as well. And that can be because when their parents are going through a divorce, the parents are dealing with their own emotions and their own stress. And sometimes that can be that they're not as emotionally available for the kids as they otherwise would be. So lots of really difficult feelings for children to be going through.
Thanks for outlining them all, because you're right. And it's great for parents to be aware that it's quite normal for children to have those feelings, and understandable, and almost to be prepared then for what will be a normal reaction to divorce.
Absolutely. I think it's really normal and really common for kids to have those feelings. And one of the things that we can touch on today is the protective factors that parents can put in place to give their children as much support as possible and to help them with those big feelings.
Brilliant. So let's start off with children under four. What are the vulnerabilities of children under four when it comes to divorce, and how can this manifest itself in their behaviour?
So really little children, and we're talking babies up to kind of reception school age children, so around the age of four, will be really vulnerable to feeling scared and worried and anxious. And they may have thoughts and feelings that to an adult seem quite irrational, but to the child, they're very logical and normal. So, for example, they might be really worried that one of their parents is going to leave and not come back, and they're not going to see them again. They are very vulnerable at that age to stress and tension in the environment around them. So they're like little sponges, aren't they, at that age? So they're going to pick up on the stress and the tension. And the way that that manifests itself in young children can often be disruption to their sleeping patterns, disruption to their eating habits, so maybe going off their food, and also things such as separation anxiety, so becoming more clingy than they otherwise would be, and also behavioural regressions, so perhaps their speech regressing back a bit, or even things like toilet training, potty training could potentially regress due to the pressure that they're under at that time.
They're quite significant impacts on the children. And again, just really good to be aware of it. So let's move on to the next age group, if you like, primary school children. How would that manifest itself?
Yeah, so younger primary school age children, say age 5 to 8, they will have a lot of the vulnerabilities that the younger children have, but they will also be more vulnerable to the feelings of grief and sadness that I mentioned at the beginning. They will be really worried about the loss of family stability and the loss of their family unit. And that can often manifest in, you know, tearful times, maybe being a bit irritable. Again, regressions in behaviour such as eating or speech. Sometimes things like tummy aches and eczema might flare up, so they're things to look out for as well. And something that we call magical thinking. So children of that age will often really want their parents to get back together, and that will really be at the forefront of their mind often, with kind of that magical thinking of, oh, they'll get back together.
Thanks so much for sharing those with us, Lena. And now to teenagers, of course, because I'd imagine that's going to be a trickier category given the probably onset of puberty and the impact that has on teenagers, as well as potentially the impact of conflict and divorce.
Absolutely. So I'd say for the tweens, you know, age 9 to 12, that's when you're likely to see anger coming through, because that's an expression of the grief and the sadness that they're feeling. And again, quite a lot of worry and anxiety sometimes. And then as kids move into the teenage years, you can start to see things like more risky behaviours. So obviously teenagers, they're pushing the boundaries anyway at that age. And when you add into the mix divorce and separation, you may see some more risk-taking behaviours and pushing the boundaries even harder. So they're the kind of things that we would expect to see, along with mood swings and that kind of thing.
And Lena, can I ask you, I mean, it must be relatively normal or commonplace for a parent to want their child to kind of prefer them over the parent that they're divorcing. Does that really have an impact on children? Is it something to watch out for and to resist the temptation to kind of pull your child closer to you rather than the other parent?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that we see a lot, and it can be very damaging for children to feel like they have to take a side with one parent over another. That can place a child in a position of real conflict, and that can lead to a lot of feelings of guilt and divided loyalties. Children can often feel quite torn if they feel like they have to pick a side, and children are really easily influenced. So we do see children being influenced by one parent to feel that one parent is good and one parent is bad. And that can be quite damaging for children. Actually, what is better for the child is to feel like it's okay for them to love both their parents, and to not have to pick a side. So providing children with reassurance that they don't have to take a side is really important. And whilst it's very, very difficult when you're going through a divorce or you're going through an acrimonious separation to speak positively of the other parent, that is really important as well, if possible, so that children feel like both of their parents love them equally.
And that they can love both parents equally, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a really important point, and avoiding blaming the other parent is critical.
That's great. Thank you so much for emphasising that. Really valuable. Thanks, Lena. So now, if we're talking about children's main needs during divorce or stressful changes like divorce, can you tell us what they are?
Absolutely. So one of the really key things that comes out in all of the research in this area is the need for children to have consistency and predictability as far as possible during this time. So what that essentially means is holding firm with boundaries, as the parent would in any event, and giving the child as consistent a routine as possible to make sure that on a day-to-day level, they've got a structure and they've got a routine in place. So that's really important. Love and connection is obviously hugely important during this time because, as I've mentioned, there can be a lot of these feelings of anxiety and worry. So if parents can provide that love and that connection with their child during that time, that's a really, really important factor to take into consideration. It's also really key for parents to try and accept the feelings that their children are having, rather than brushing them under the carpet or dismissing them. So acceptance of all feelings, good and bad, is really important. And then finally, it's really good if parents can have a consistent and cohesive story or narrative that they can give to their children during this period. So that is really important, especially for younger children, to make sure that they understand what's going on and that both parents are sending the same message to the children, to provide them with that coherent narrative about what's happening in their life.
That makes a lot of sense. They need to have a story, I suppose, that they can relate to and that they can help them understand what's going on.
Exactly. And, you know, that can be easier said than done sometimes, because to a large extent it's going to depend on the age of the children. And obviously, in many families, they may have a big age range with their kids. And actually, the younger children are going to have very different needs to older children. So it's trying to make sure that all of the messages that the children are getting are age appropriate.
And I found it fascinating what you said about routine and structure. I mean, it makes sense when you say it, but I suppose it must be so tempting as a parent, you know, if you are going through a divorce, just to let all the rules go out the window because you don't want to be cracking down on your children at a time when they're vulnerable. But that's such great advice, to actually stick with the routines, keep it nice and boring, even like just yes. No big surprises.
Absolutely right. It's more important than ever to provide children with that consistency and those boundaries.
Brilliant advice. And what do you think affects children most as they go through parental separation?
So this is a really interesting question. And I think that a lot of parents worry that their children are going to suffer emotional harm as a result of a divorce or separation. That is not necessarily the case. What we now know is that it's a prolonged exposure to conflict and the knock-on effect of that conflict to the quality of parenting that has the impact. So it's not necessarily the divorce and the separation in itself that causes children long-term harm. It's exposure to conflict.
Very, very good to know that, and great to bear in mind for parents, because again, it's not necessarily what you would assume is the case. So thank you, Lena. So if we're talking about the impact of conflict on children, how is that likely to play out?
So a number of ways, some of which we've already touched on in terms of regressions to earlier behaviours, physical symptoms like tummy aches or eczema flare-ups and that kind of thing. But in addition to that, you can see higher levels of anger and aggression. Sometimes children can suffer with symptoms of depression and anxiety. With the older children, as I said, that can sometimes manifest in risk-taking behaviours that they wouldn't necessarily otherwise be engaging in. There can be a knock-on impact on children's self-confidence. And a point that I found really interesting when I've been, you know, researching this topic in more detail is the fight or flight mode situation. So if a child is exposed to a prolonged level of conflict, their brain is likely to be going into fight or flight mode a lot of the time. And what the implications of that are, it can actually impact on a child's ability to learn, and it can impact on a child's ability to regulate their emotions. So these are the types of impacts that we see. But as we'll come on to, there are lots of ways that parents can mitigate against these impacts and make the divorce as less stressful as possible for the kids.
And that's my next question, actually, is does divorce harm children?
So the research now tends to show that it isn't the divorce itself that harms children. Of course, divorce is going to be a really sad time for everybody, and children are going to have the thoughts and feelings that we've talked about, like the grief, the sadness, the fear, the anxiety. But those things can actually be relatively short term and relatively short lived if parents can reduce the children's exposure to any conflict and tension. So it's the conflict and the tension that seems to be the thing that has the long term big impact on children.
Great to know and to focus parents' attention. And in that process, so what are the vulnerable moments for children in the divorce process?
Yeah, that's a really good question. As you know, as we all know, divorce can take a really long time in some cases. It's usually months, in some cases it can be years. Obviously that's a worst case scenario, but we're talking about a fairly significant period of time in a child's life. And over that period of time, there are going to be certain moments when children are more vulnerable. So these can include things like when the parents first tell the children that they are separating or divorcing, when the children are told that one parent is going to be moving out of the family home, when the child arrangements are being determined, when one of their parents meets a new partner, when the finances are being dealt with by their parents and decisions are being taken as to what's going to happen with, you know, the house and the money and all of that side of things. If one parent decides to move away, that's going to be another moment of vulnerability for children. And then, of course, looking further to the future, if one or both parents remarry and there are, you know, stepbrothers and stepsisters that come into play, that's also going to be a moment when children are going to be feeling most vulnerable.
But what you've outlined there, Lena, is so helpful, because we can't convince ourselves that divorce is always going to be a positive, easy process. We're not out to do that. We're out to understand the process, get an overview and understand what's going to happen and when. And by outlining it the way you've just done, I think it's so valuable and so helpful to parents to be forearmed and forewarned so that they're equipped with tools to deal with the fallout, I suppose, of divorce, maybe even before it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. There are lots of things that parents can do to minimise the impact of the divorce on their children. And that's really positive because, as I said, a lot of children whose parents go through a divorce or separation won't suffer long-term trauma or long-term scars, provided that their parents are able to provide them with support and consistency during that time, and provided that they're not exposed to a high level of conflict for a prolonged period of time.
Excellent.
So the kind of things that parents can think about at this time include having what we would call a responsive parenting style. So that's being emotionally available for the kids, being in tune with the children's emotions and the children's emotional needs at that time, and providing them with responsive parenting. What is really important, and unfortunately it's sadly not possible with every family, but wherever possible, parents should be trying to cooperate with one another when it comes to co-parenting the kids. That's really important because, again, that helps provide children with consistency and structure and a supportive environment so that they're getting the same messages from both parents and they're seeing that their parents are trying their best to work together for their sake. Another thing would be making sure that the children have really positive attachments to, for example, other adults in their lives. So wider family members, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, friends at school, and of course, teachers at school is really important as well. And there are loads of resources out there for parents to, you know, to help make sure that they're putting these kind of things in place for their children. And we can touch on those in more detail.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Lena. I mean, those protective factors that you've outlined there, again, give such support to parents to think through how divorce is going to impact their children from their perspective and to help put them in their shoes. Because, of course, while this is all going on, the parents are wrestling with a very difficult issue themselves. So having to think through exactly how to manage your children's emotions and the impact on your children is tricky. So that's incredibly helpful.
Absolutely. And what's really important for, I think, for parents to bear in mind during this time is that all behaviour is communication. So all behaviour that they're seeing in their children is a way of the children communicating how they're feeling. And that ties into the point about responsive parenting and being really alive to the way that their children are behaving and bearing in mind that children will be acting out how they're feeling inside.
And so you mentioned resources. We love a good resource list on the Parents Show. So I'd love to know where you would signpost our parents in case they want to read up on what you've said, because what you've said has been fantastic. But if they want to have some supplementary information, that'd be great.
Absolutely. So there's some amazing resources out there and a lot of them are free resources, which is always good. So I was having a look on the Hertfordshire Council website and there's some really good resources on there. There's a whole list of parenting courses that parents can sign up to that are specifically aimed at parents that are going through divorce and separation. So some of those were run through the Hertfordshire Family Centre service, which is an amazing service, and the majority of what they offer is free of charge. There's another organisation called Family Lives, and again, there's some links there to the parenting courses run by that organisation. There's also an organisation called Resolution, which is National Association of Family Lawyers, of which I'm a member. We all sign up to a code of conduct to try and deal with our cases in a non-confrontational way without going to court wherever possible. And the Resolution website has some amazing resources on it for parents. Again, free information and lots of links. There's a really good book called 101 Questions Answered About Separating with Children, and that can be purchased online. It's I don't know the cost off the top of my head, but it's not too expensive. And it's an incredible book, 101 questions answered, everything that you could possibly think of. So that's an amazing book. Other organisations to think about are the British Association for Counselling and Psychotherapy, and they have a really good website. The UK Council for Psychotherapy, and also the Institute of Family Therapy. So loads of resources out there. Lots and lots of books available to purchase as well, to do with high conflict parenting after separation. There's lots of co-parenting books available. And then books also that are aimed at children to explain divorce and separation to children.
Brilliant. Thanks, Lena. And actually, I mean, the advice you've given us in this interview is so valuable for those parents who are a bit time poor. I'm sure this will tick a load of the boxes for them. So, and you know, it struck me when you were talking about it, you were signposting psychotherapy books. As a family lawyer, you almost have to be a kind of so aware of the psychological impact of the work. It's almost like two jobs in one.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's such an important part of the job, is to be able to recognise what that particular family is going through and to be able to provide some reassurance, but also signposting our clients to support services and ways in which they can help their children as best as possible through that time. So yeah, we do have to have different hats on as family lawyers.
Yeah, that's really evident from hearing how in-depth you've gone into how it impacts on children. And now we always like to end on a positive note. And so I'd love to get your thoughts or advice, any positive suggestions or ideas to finish up our chat today.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot less stigma around divorce nowadays, what divorce and separation. And it is, you know, pretty common. It's nearly one in two marriages now end in a divorce. So there's a lot less stigma around it. And I think what that means is that people can talk about it more openly and children can talk about it more openly as well. And that's a really positive thing. Often when parents separate, there can almost be a sense of relief, not only for them, but also for the children. Because if it's been an unhappy relationship, that's not good for anybody either. So there can be that sense of relief and that change, which can be an opportunity for new possibilities for everybody in the family. Children are really resilient and they can cope really well. And if parents can be alive to the thoughts and feelings that children have at this time, and if parents can be there for the children, provide them with support, try and co-parent as harmoniously as the circumstances allow, then most children will be able to move through this really hard time and learn to accept it and actually look forward to the future rather than looking back at the past. So we can definitely end on a positive note in that way, I think.
Lena, thank you so much for your wise words, your valuable advice, and for joining us on The Parents Show.
Thank you, Lydia.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.